We have been talking about the results of the latest Wisconsin survey from Wisconsin Public Radio and St. Norbert College for the last couple of days on issues like gay marriage, voting rights, the minimum wage, the race for governor. And we have received some strong comments from different political perspectives. And over the last few years, Wisconsin seems to have gotten more polarized. We will now talk about the polarization of Wisconsin politics in this half hour with our survey analyst, St. Norbert College political scientist, Wendy Scattergood. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Friday, April 11th. How serious a problem do you think polarization is in Wisconsin? Do you sense the heated political tension in the state turning around or not? What's behind polarization and what can be done about it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome back Wendy Scattergood, Assistant Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere and Associate at the St. Norbert College Strategic Research Institute. She will be writing a book on Wisconsin's polarized politics. Good morning again.
Good morning.
So you didn't actually survey about polarization this time around, but in looking at these results, how polarized would you say Wisconsin is right now?
Well, it depends, actually, as always. And part of that is the polarization is primarily on how we perceive our elected leaders. The polarization amongst that between Democrats and Republicans in the public is really large and has been growing over the last several years. But when we look at polarization in terms of differences between Democrats and Republicans on policy issues, then that's significantly less, meaning that there's a lot more agreement and Democrats and Republicans in the public on different issues are quite a bit closer on a number of issues.
Yeah, what do you mean? How does the polarization, how is it illustrated in how we perceive our elected leaders?
Mm-hmm. Well, when we ask questions about approval ratings for the job that the president is doing and that the governor is doing, what we find is that, you know, Democrats in Wisconsin don't like the governor, but they like the president, and vice versa for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very little crossover, whereas in past years, when it was less, we found that, you know, if we had a Republican governor that, you know, for example, Tommy Thompson was a very popular governor, and there were a lot of Democrats who thought that it had high job approval ratings for him. Even with Doyle in the beginning, particularly in his first term, I mean, there was a lot of crossover where there were a lot of Republicans in, again, in the public who were saying that, you know, they thought he was doing a good job. But as the economy started to go down, then his approval rating started to go down across the board, I mean, even amongst Democrats.
Yeah. Then how is the polarization, I guess, less intense when it comes to the public and policy issues?
Mm-hmm. So measuring it in the same way. So we're looking at different questions of saying, do you favor or oppose this particular issue? And then looking at the difference between those percentages for Democrats and Republicans. So, for example, this time we asked about the rights for same-sex couples for legal rights, so civil union types of stuff. And what we found is that those who approve, the difference between Democrats and Republicans was 25%. So that means Democrats were 25%. They were likely to approve of those. But compared to spring of 12, when we asked that same question, the difference between Democrats and Republicans was 34.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually see a narrowing of that difference, which means that Democrats and Republicans in the public are closer together on their opinion of legal rights for same-sex couples.
And it seemed to me that the minimum wage results this time around it was a boy, it was 3/4 of our respondents saying they approved an increase in the minimum wage. So that would be another one where Republicans and Democrats are a little closer on the same page.
Right, exactly. And that came out about in the middle. We asked about 8 different policy questions. And so I looked at those, the differences between Democrats and Republicans on those different issues. And raising the minimum wage from $7.25 came out at a difference between Democrats and Republicans of 42, which was like right in the middle. That was
okay.
Number 4. Whereas the 10-10, the other question we asked about the minimum wage, if, do you approve of support it going up to 10-10, was actually the number 1 most polarized. And that was, there was a 56% difference between Democrats and Republicans on that question. Again, compared to the number 8 which, on the bottom, which was the civil union question, which was 25% difference between Republicans and Democrats.
Well, in 2010, the conservative Republicans, the Tea Party, made some big gains all across the country, even putting the House of Representatives back in Republican control. And since then, it seems like the GOP House and the Democratic Senate have just been butting heads and not getting a whole lot done. How much of a turning point do you think 2010 was in terms of this polarization in national politics anyway?
Well, and again, I think there's a difference between what in the literature, the research literature, is called the elites. I don't really like that term, but elected officials. And that is, we know that the polarization amongst elected officials is much greater than it is the polarization in the public.
Yeah, so if you're representing the public, you're more polarized than who you're representing.
Yes.
Yeah. But here in Wisconsin in 2010, Republicans gained control of everything, I think, with the assembly, the Senate, the governor's office, and while the Supreme Court is nonpartisan, conservatives outnumber the the progressives there. How is there this much of a divide and not just a hard right slant across the board?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we did have this, what ended up being this massive change. We also had Russ Feingold as an incumbent senator lose his seat, which is really unusual.
Right.
And also we had 2 Democratic House seats here in the 8th Congressional District, and then Representative Obie, when he retired, both of those went Republican as well. So we had, of all of the states, we actually had the biggest changeover in terms of power between the parties of any state. And that's kind of what got me started on thinking, maybe I should do a bigger project about this. But I think part of what we have to remember about Wisconsin is, too, we are a battleground state, and that is that we've got very close numbers typically between Democrats and Republicans. So that any relatively even small shift from one party to the other can have big differences in terms of, like you said, the Wisconsin Assembly and the Senate going from Democrat majorities to Republican majorities. That can happen because they're relatively close in number already. But I think also it's very, very tied to the perceived health of the economy, and that the incumbents are really going to be hurt by that. And in 2010, we start the recession in 2009, people are really worried, and it doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon by 2010. And there was a big backlash against, which in Wisconsin was the time primarily democratically controlled both state government as well as in our representatives in Congress.
Yeah. And then if I'm trying to remember here, we also see in 2012, President Obama getting reelected in the state by a pretty big margin. We see Democrat Tammy Baldwin winning a Senate seat. Yet that same year, Wisconsin put Governor Walker back in office in the recall, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, Governor Walker won the recall by an additional percent than he won the original 2010 election. And the Tammy Baldwin, Tommy Thompson was very, very close. There was only a 2% difference in the outcome of that race. So again, part of this is again, the Democrats and Republicans are relatively close in terms of numbers. It's the independents that are really key here in Wisconsin. As we found this time, there's about 25%. That's pretty normal. And every time I've done this survey since the fall of 2001, we find the independents to be very moderate and to be in between on policy stances and on approval ratings for the different leaders, et cetera, to be right in between the Democrats and the Republicans. And they are the ones that make us a swing state, that they're going to go back and forth. And then the other variable there at election time is turnout, that if they aren't very excited, if one of the parties aren't very excited about their candidates, they're just not going to turn out. And as I said, that can change the outcome of an election because the numbers in the population are so large. So if there's a significant turnout difference between the parties, then that can change everything.
We are talking with Wendy Scattergood, an assistant professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, about the wild and wacky world of Wisconsin politics, talking about how polarized are we anyway? Wendy is going to write a book on the subject, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for her. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with St. Norbert College Assistant Political Science Professor Wendy Scattergood about polarization in Wisconsin politics. And we're welcoming your questions and views for her. Let's go to Scott in New Glarus. Hello, Scott.
Yes, good morning. Speaking primarily of Wisconsin politics and the polarization that we see, I think it's the epitome of political evil in self-serving, the self-serving nature that it can sometimes take. When you have a politician, on record saying, "I'm going to divide and conquer as a strategy," in pitting one group against another, and make your neighbor think you're the enemy, and you think he's the enemy. I mean, when you have that as a strategy to success and to winning, you're going to get polarization. It's classic divide and conquer. And we've got a governor who is on record as saying, "This is going to be my strategy." And
yeah. Let me get Wendy to respond. Can a politician divide a state, Wendy?
Yeah, certainly. And a lot of the research literature is looking at what they say is it's sort of top down is what's causing the polarization. Is that the messages that are from both sides, frankly, that are polarizing in their statements, then is what's getting then filtering down to the public.
Let's go to Cody in Oshkosh. Hello, Cody.
Hello. I would agree 100% with what Scott just said. I think it's the alliance between the fearful Christian right and big corporate money, and then you get somebody like Scott Walker in the middle of it, and the Fitzgerald brothers and Robin Voss, and they are just trying to divide and conquer us, and they have huge amounts of money convincing people, especially the Christian right, to fear the other and to hold on to their social issues combined with advancing corporate America.
Yeah. So do you think the polarization is getting worse or getting better, Cody?
I think it actually is getting better. I was just at an NCAA party watching the games, and, I mean, on policy, like your guest says, we all agree 100% there's too much money in politics, yet they'll still all vote for Republicans. But they agree with me 100% that we got to get this money out of politics. I think we need a constitutional amendment to say money isn't speech, corporations aren't people, And I don't even want a legislator to give a free bag lunch for anything. We can pay them enough. We have to have fair and balanced elections. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Well, lots there. But Wendy, do we have any idea if this polarization is getting better or worse?
Yeah, there's some indications. Some people, again, just say it doesn't exist really in the public. It's really only in the elected officials that it exists, and it doesn't appear to be going away anytime soon, particularly if you look at the retirements of moderates in the parties on both sides. Olympia Snow, Dave Obie, those kinds of folks have been retiring from Congress and even from the state legislature, and that makes the parties, then, the people who are left, seem more extreme, even though they haven't changed, but they're the only ones left in the party. And so that doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon. But the other part of that, too, to remember is that polarization is kind of normal in not only Wisconsin politics, but in national history, is that we sort of have a lot of eras of polarization. And whenever everyone is like, oh, things are so bad right now, I'm thinking, probably not as bad as the Civil War.
Yeah, right. There's certainly been periods of history where there's been even more polarization.
Yeah. Or Vietnam in the 60s with the race issues. I mean,
yeah. But, you know, saying that it doesn't exist in the public but does with the politicians, what about the statements that we just heard from callers that, you know, that people on one side fear the other or are mad at the other because maybe they're at the government trough or, you know, does that exist?
Mm-hmm. It certainly does. And what I found was really interesting is I was kind of looking through not only this survey that we've just done, but some of the past ones. And what was interesting, it came out as a pattern, was that the more general the questions are about the different issues, the more polarized it is. But then when we ask specifics about parts of policies or talking about what the policy would actually look like as opposed to just the policy issue, then it's much less polarized. So, for example, when we ask very generally about sort of the problem of illegal immigration, there's quite a bit of polarization there. But then when you ask about specific policies, like what should we do? Should we have people who are working here and but are illegal but have a job, no criminal record, should they be given a path towards citizenship? That question, there's much less difference between Democrats and Republicans than there is sort of how big of a problem do you think illegal immigration is in the United States.
I see. Let's go to David in Sturgeon Bay now. Hello, David.
Good morning, Julie and Wendy. Great program. I wanted to just amplify the last two callers about why we would be surprised about polarization when you have a governor whose strategy it was to divide and conquer. And then upon topped on that, you've got purposeful vilification of unions, poor, and then recently Paul Ryan comes out and blames lazy black men for the cause of problems in America. I did have when I correspond with legislators, they don't respond back. And so at this point, I would say that I am not represented by people that are elected. So great program. Thanks.
All right. Do you have a reaction to that, Wendy?
In some of the open-ended questions that we asked about the biggest problems, there were a number of people that mentioned both at the national and the state level that they felt that government wasn't listening to them, that it was really separated from the people. So that sentiment was reflected in our survey results for sure.
Yeah, let's go next to Bernie in Elkhorn. Hello, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. I just want to make a minor taking you to task point. Wendy, you had mentioned that both parties were responsible for the divisiveness of the elected people and the parties. In the state of Wisconsin, the Republicans pull out a lot of dirty tricks with voter ID, the gerrymandering, redistricting, et cetera. And when elected Democrats call them on that, that's not an equivalence. The Republicans are doing the dirty trick, but the Democrats in Wisconsin are calling it out. You know, the Republicans are the ones at fault, pure and simple. And one other quick point is at the national level, watch out for the things there's bipartisan support for, like support for Israel, the national security state, the drug war, et cetera. There are a lot of issues that may not be polled on that both of these parties, you know, free trade agreements are in agreement on, but they really stink.
Well, kind of. But I thanks for getting that in, Bernie. So both parties are not equally responsible. Bernie is saying the Republicans are wrong and the Dems are just calling them out.
Well, that's certainly in the eye of the beholder, and because Republicans, of course, are going to say that Democrats are doing some divide and conquer issues as well. We have Republicans Party as a majority in the state right now in the legislature, and of course the governor. So they're the ones that are able to get their policies passed. So people who don't like those policies then are certainly going to perceive that as being heading in the wrong direction.
You know, we only have a minute or so to go here. Republican State Senator Dale Schultz and Democratic Senator Tim Cullen, two moderates in the state legislature, are retiring after this term. GOP Congressman Tom Petri, a moderate, is being challenged by State Senator Glenn Grothman, a conservative. Is there any room left for moderates in politics, Wendy?
Well, part of the problem is the primary system, and that is that the people who actually vote in primaries are more likely to be party activists who tend to be, I don't want to use the term extreme, but compared to the public, they are. I mean, they're more partisan than the general public who's going to vote in the general election. So part of the problem is that if moderate people in the public are not voting in the primaries, then people who have more partisan views are going to win those primaries, and then our choices are between a more extreme on both the liberal and conservative side to choose from in the public, and that's frustrating for the moderate middle public.
Wendy, 15 seconds. How long before this book comes out?
2017 is the plan.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you before then, I hope. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Wendy Scattergood is with St. Norbert College in De Pere. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.